Let's foray into Nevada's wild spaces. This is a half an hour adventure with the Nevada Department of Wildlife. This is Nevada Wild.
Here on this mountaintop,
welcome to Nevada Wild, brought to you by the Nevada Department of Wildlife and 630 AM Fox Sports Radio right here in Reno. Check out our podcast at nevadawild.org, and you can also find us on iTunes. We're bringing you news, information, and discussion about wildlife, boating, and outdoor recreation across Nevada. I'm Edwin Lingar.
And I'm Teresa Malloy.
March 1st marks the beginning of a new license year for NDAO, meaning that if you hunt, fish, or trap, your license has just expired. So it's time to go pick up a new one. The beginning of March is also a traditional time when people start thinking about sport fishing. Today we've invited John Schoberg, the chief of the Fisheries Division, to talk to us about what's coming up statewide for anglers and the important role fishing plays in conservation across the state. Welcome, John, and thanks for coming back to the show.
You bet, Ed. Happy to be here.
So it is. Everyone who really fishes or hunts, they know that March 1st, that means it's time to go buy a new license. Do we have any forecasts? What do you think the fishing is going to be like this spring and into the fall?
Well, yeah, as you know, and certainly as anglers know around the state, we're kind of hopefully at the tail end of a multi-year drought, probably one of the most significant droughts we've had in a long time. But hopefully this year is looking up. It's been, at least in northern Nevada, a pretty decent winter, so to speak. You know, we started out really strong. We were up to, you know, over 100% of average up until this last month. And it's dropped off a little, but it's only the 1st of March. Even if we didn't get much more, we're still doing significantly better than we have in the past. So I think really all around the state, and particularly in the central and northern part of the state, it's going to be a better year than we've seen in a while. The drought has really impacted a lot of wild trout populations, wild fish populations in some of the rivers and streams, but a lot of the reservoirs will be doing fine. We do have our regular stocking program, particularly the northeastern part of the state, has had a really good winter so far, even better than we've seen in northwestern and western Nevada. So, you know, reservoirs like South Fork around Elko, Even Lahontan, we didn't lose the fishery. We're sampling right now, and most of our sport fish populations have survived. Stream fishing in a lot of places, we'll have the streams, but we may not have the fish populations because we have lost some wild fisheries over several years of extended low stream flows. But I think the fishing will be a lot better than it has been all around the state, and I think it's something that people finally will have a chance to look forward to.
So when you say wild fisheries, are those like streams that we don't stock, that the population is self-sustaining there in years where there's water?
That's typically what I'm talking about. You know, in some cases, and I'll give you an example, the Truckee River.
Mm-hmm.
While we do stock the Truckee River a lot, and that supports a part of the fishery, we also have resident wild populations of rainbow and brown trout. Those are those larger naturalized wild fish are the ones that probably are the most impacted, but we should have good stream flows. Those populations will recover hopefully over the next couple of years if we have more average water years.
Right.
And in the meantime, we will be actively stocking a lot of waters around the state to provide that opportunity.
Sure. Now, you mentioned the Truckee River. We'd been stocking that early for the last couple of years because of the water situation and us concerned that the river would dry out before the end of the season. Are we going to be doing that early, or are we back to maybe a normal schedule now?
There are a few waters around the state that we'll probably be stocking early, but that's being driven less by the water conditions than is by some needs in some of our hatchery facilities to get the fish out a little bit early. For the Truckee River, for example, we're hopeful that we'll be able to go back to a more normal stocking regime, and we won't have to load everything up in the springtime before we run out of water.
Right, and you keep talking about stocking, so I want to bring this up, that Nevada does a lot of what they call put-and-take fishery. You want to explain that?
Well, we do. And again, we actually have a program where all the fishable waters in the state are classified and managed according to different objectives. And we have some waters where they're managed as trophy waters, and we do little, if any, stocking there. We have some waters that are managed what we call put, grow, and take waters, where we put fish in with the expectation that there will be some longer-term survival and then produce some larger fish over time. And we have a lot of waters that are what we would call put-and-take waters. We stock those fish expecting that anglers will catch them fairly soon after they're stocked. Our urban ponds, certainly a lot of the stocking in the Truckee River in the summertime is catchable-sized fish that we expect to get caught. Places like Eagle Valley Reservoir in Lincoln County, some other waters around the state like that, that see a lot of intense use, and we want to maintain that opportunity to catch fish. But we expect those fish won't last long.
You know, I know that a lot of people don't like fishing, some hardcore anglers, but that is my favorite thing to do. And last year was not great to take my kids out to one of the urban ponds right around Reno and, you know, go into those put-and-take fisheries right after they've been stocked where my six-year-old can catch a fish. That means everything to her.
Well, again, and that's one of the great things about fishing is that there's an opportunity to pursue it any way that you want to. And the urban ponds are a great opportunity to take the kids down, to dunk a worm, to throw in a lure, and get them introduced to, you know, the excitement and the thrill of fishing. Whereas it might be a little different with your six-year-old to get them to stand there in a stream with a fly rod for 6 hours and not really get too successful.
That introduction that you talk about is so important, because I think when they do get that enthusiasm as a kid and they're used to it and like in their mind it's cemented as something that's fun to do, they can develop those fly fishing skills later as they're more capable. But
I don't know. I want to just jump in here and say that I fish like a six-year-old and I'm not afraid to admit it.
Okay, but you're
I
happy doing
it.
I want
to go drown a worm. I am worse than her. She's still fishing and I walk
off. That
doesn't
really surprise me a whole lot, Ed.
Yeah, it is so much fun. I love it. And you know, you mentioned these waters. You haven't mentioned Angel Lake, and I want to bring that up because that's my favorite place to go fishing because it's so beautiful. Do you know what that's looking like?
I think, again, that part of the state has had a pretty good water year, probably better than we've had in anywhere else in the state. So I expect we'll be back full swing with Angel Lake with the stocking program there, and trying to maintain that as a real opportunity, and not just for the locals, but it's a bit of a destination for other folks from around the state.
There, the watching the stargazing there is amazing, and you know, I want to bring this up because a lot of people listen to the show. We air it here in Reno, and people listen to it in Vegas, but we've got a lot of really great off-the-beaten-track fisheries like Angel Lake and Cave Lake and that are absolutely gorgeous and offer not just fishing, but fishing and picnicking. So
yeah, absolutely. You know, and there's a lot of other opportunities too. It isn't just trout. And, you know, hopefully, for example, Ruby Marsh and Ruby Lake National Wildlife Refuge in Ruby Valley, which is not that far from Angel Lake. I mean, it's just down over Secret Pass, I think it is.
Yep.
Down
it
into
is.
Ruby Valley.
Yep.
You know, that's been a little problematic the last few years for access simply because of the drought that we've been in.
You know, I have to say, you brought that up, and that, again, bringing back childhood memories, my dad loved to take us fishing out there, and we did bass fish.
Right, and that's
yep,
where
when
I'm
I
going,
was a little
is,
kid.
Is opportunities
warm water
for warm water fishing,
yep.
for bass, and hopefully with a pretty good snowpack in that part of the state, we'll see some water elevations come up in the marsh, and people have a little better access than they have in a while.
You know, you bring up my next question. I had jotted down that I wanted to talk to you about the southern half of the state. You spent much of your career, for people who don't know, in the southern half of the state, and there's some real unique fishing down there and a big fish. What do we expect this year?
Well, that's one of the interesting things is that obviously people, when people think of southern Nevada and particularly the Colorado River system, they look at pictures of Lake Mead in particular and see how low the water is. But that really hasn't affected the angling itself. It affects access a little bit. Certainly it's been more difficult the last few years for shore anglers.
And launching a boat is also
and
a
launching
problem.
A boat, the Park Service, National Park Service, is doing the best they can to extend ramps and maintain that access. But it's a lot further to the water than it was, you know, 5 years or 10 years ago. And I expect Mead will probably remain fairly stable where it's at for the next year or so. But the fishing is still good, and when we go look at the information we collect from anglers, the catch rates are just as good as they have been. It's been pretty consistent over time. And Lake Mojave, also, it maintains a high stable level. It really doesn't change much. The angling there has been pretty good. We've seen a lot of good success for smallmouth bass in Mojave compared to what people caught traditionally. And I think the striper fishing is as good as it's always been. It varies a little from year to year depending on the production of threadfin shad, because that's their primary forage for the stripers. But we still occasionally see some nice fish, and we've seen plenty of fish come out of both Mead and Mojave that are in that, you know, 15 to 25 pound range. They still occur.
So
it's
they're
not
just
unheard of.
More concentrated, if you will, with less water. So if you get out there and you get on the water, there's good fish in there.
Well, I'd like to say the fish jump in your boat, but you have to understand that Lake Mead is a very large lake. So even when it's at 54% of capacity, it's still a very large lake.
It's 300 feet deep even now. I try to tell people that, who say you can't boat there. 300 feet of water.
It's still 300 to 400 feet deep.
Sure.
So while it theoretically concentrates the fish, they're still a long ways apart. They're just not quite as far apart as they were
before. As they once were. So they're not going to jump into my boat. You've crushed my dreams.
And I apologize for that.
So last question about angling. You're an angler. What are you looking forward to this year? What's got you excited?
Well, I think what's got me excited is the opportunity to actually have some decent stream flow out there. I've decided when I moved back up to northern Nevada 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, that it was an opportunity to start fly fishing again. And I managed to choose that path in combination with a biblical 4-year extended drought. So now that we finally have some stream flow, I'm looking forward to the opportunity to get out there and reacquire some skills I used to have.
I think what he is saying is that we can blame the drought on him. He moved up here, and then this drought occurred. So I think he's personally to blame for that.
John is a scientist. He's going to tell you correlation does not equal causation.
That's true.
Yeah, I saw geese flying south last winter. That wasn't what made it cold.
That is a good analogy there.
All right. Well, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more in depth about non-sporting and fishing and how you can be part of the solution to preserving fishing that does not involve catching fish. More right after this.
Well, I'm long gone to Saskatchewan, long gone to Saskatchewan, where the getting's good if you're getting gone. I'm gonna put my boots and my hat back on, cause I'm long gone to Saskatchewan, long gone to Saskatchewan.
You're listening to Nevada Wild Podcasting and on 630 AM Fox Sports Radio. If you enjoy Nevada Wild, feel free to leave us a positive review at iTunes. If you don't enjoy the show, we'd prefer you kept that to yourself. To learn more about hunting, angling, boating safety, and the great outdoors, check us out at ndow.org. And now, back to the show.
We're back in the second half of our show. Joining us again is John Schoberg to talk about the bigger picture of fish and conservation. So, you know, John, angling funds a lot of other parts of your fisheries programs. I mean, is that correct? Tell us how that works.
Well, it's true in terms of conservation for a lot of things. And, you know, we get funds from anglers in two ways, because there is direct license sales. And sales of fishing licenses, the trout stamp, similar permits that we sell. But the large part of our funding, the majority of our funding, actually comes from something called the Sport Fish Restoration Act. And that's an excise tax that is levied at the federal level on fishing tackle, trolling motors, a variety of other things, and also motorboat fuel. A percentage of the tax that comes in from fuel sales is allocated based on fuel for boats. So that provides a variety of funding that anglers provide, and it not only directly supports things like fish stocking and our management, it supports the fish hatcheries that we operate. It supports boat access programs to develop things like boat ramps and other facilities for anglers. And it goes to support things like a portion of it, for example, goes to support our aquatic invasive species program that helps protect waters in this state from things like quagga and zebra mussels and other things. So it comes from a variety of sources, but the money that anglers directly pay goes to conservation, but it goes to conservation really of sport fish species and not what we would call non-game fish species that you can't catch.
Right, but sport fish species are, of course, important in that ecosystem too, and of course it is very important to keep stuff like you mentioned, like invasive species, out of waters. So, I mean, there's definitely this piece of that ecosystem that sport fish fill a role in.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, we want to talk about conservation. Probably one of our most important programs that we do is for conservation of Nevada's native trout species, because there are actually seven we would call salmonid or trout species that are native to the state of Nevada. And a lot of anglers, particularly in northern Nevada, will be familiar with Lahontan cutthroat trout, mm-hmm. which is unique to the Great Basin. It occurs all the way from northeastern Nevada, places like the Marys River system, to the headwaters of the Carson and Walker Rivers, the Lake Tahoe Basin, in northwestern Nevada, up north of Winnemucca, and small streams up there. And that's really a big focus of a lot of our sport fish conservation, is working for recovery of Lahontan cutthroat trout and also other native trout in the state.
Right, because we have these native trout, and so they're both a native fish species and a sport fish species. Right. So really the effort works together.
It works together, and these are fish that anglers can fish for. We have a program called the Native Fish Slam where anglers can catch all seven of those native salmonids and actually get some special recognition for that. But we have Yellowstone cutthroat. We have Bonneville cutthroat. We have bull trout. We have mountain whitefish. We have a variety of these species across particularly the northern part of the state. And it's an important focus of the work we do, is to try to restore and maintain those sport fish that actually are native to Nevada and the Great Basin and some adjacent areas of the Columbia and Snake River systems that drain from northern and northeastern Nevada.
Now, we have some of these fish that are unique to Nevada, but we actually have some fish that are not sport fish, and they're unique to the planet. I mean, so we have the famous devil's hole pupfish that really is only found in one place here in southern Nevada.
Well, we do. We have, actually, Nevada has an extremely diverse fish fauna across it, and that reflects the history of the state, which was these big Pleistocene and pluvial lakes that eventually dried and left these isolated pockets of unique species. Devil's hole pupfish is just one of them in the Ash Meadows area, but there are several other pupfish. There are springfish. There are tui chub. There's a variety of these fish species around the state that are very unique and occur nowhere else in the world.
You know, I've seen the pictures of people swimming in that hole that the devil's hole pupfish. Have you ever swam in that thing?
I have not, because I'm not certified as a diver for some reasons related to my inability to clear my ears.
Okay.
I haven't been certified for a long time. I have helped with the counts. We do have some agency personnel that are certified, and you have to be a certified cave diver. It can't be just anyone.
You have to be a certified cave. That looks otherworldly to be in that thing.
Special cave training to go down into Devil's Hole, and they help the National Park Service on those surveys and on the monitoring for devil's hole pupfish. But again, that's just one of a whole suite of these. And I think it's important that people understand that the conservation we do for a lot of these other species is, it's paid for by the public. It's not directly paid for specifically by anglers. It comes from a variety of sources, but we have funding that's specific for recovery of endangered species that comes from general revenue sources, both from the state and from the federal government that we use to support those programs.
Exactly. I always like to put out there, though, that we're sort of all under one big umbrella as people. Like, you have anglers who care very much for the conservation of fish and fish species, even if they're not sport fish. And you have folks who are into conservation and realize the importance of all these diverse species in the ecosystem. And really, we're under the same umbrella. I mean, what's good for these environments and these ecosystems really benefits a lot of different folks and their interests.
Well, absolutely. And I think that's the understanding we have to have about why we do these kind of more broad scale conservation efforts for aquatic species, is that a healthy aquatic system is going to support all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And a properly functioning stream, a properly functioning spring and outflow is important to the landscape and into the maintenance of that landscape. It's more than just focusing on the individual species.
Exactly, and I think that's really what that it's key, that how they all fit together and how it's part of a bigger picture. And anybody who has concern for any of these species really needs to see that. And I think now more than ever, people really are. Ed and I talk on the show about people really care about wildlife. And I think we're also starting to see that people really care about fish. I mean, even though, you know, they're wet and slimy sometimes, I mean, it's really part of the greater picture. Now, we talked about drought a little bit before in the show. How has that impacted some of these non-sport fishes that we've talked about and their populations?
Well, again, you know, the drought, as we've seen it, and even though it was a fairly long-term drought, and particularly in northern Nevada, it's you know, we're looking at 4 to 5 years of pretty reduced stream flows, pretty reduced snowpack. That affects, you know, groundwater recharge and other things. But it more affects the stream systems that support things like Lahontan cutthroat trout and other trout species, and some native fishes as well. A lot of the unique, rare, non-game fishes that we have occur in springs and spring outflows. And those generally have maintained themselves because they're tied into these deeper groundwater aquifers. And besides, these unique fishes evolved under some pretty severe conditions. I mean, we've had a 4-year drought, but you ain't seen nothing.
Right, compared to the large scale.
Compared to what's happened probably over the past 10,000 years in the Great Basin. So these fish are pretty hardy. As long as they're wet, they'll persist, even in very small numbers. So, you know, a long term to us, but short term in the big geologic picture, drought doesn't eventually affect things as much as you might think, as long as we eventually get a little bit of reversal in conditions.
Sure. So then they persist. So I have a question out of curiosity. This is something I always think about. You know, we talked about sport fish, and then we talked about non-sport fish and native and endemic fishes. What about stuff like carp? I know that people fish for them.
Especially carp.
They're not like a game species. Where do they fall into this sort of equation?
Well, carp in Nevada are interesting. And carp actually, of course, they're not native. They were brought here in, I believe it was the 1870s, by the original Nevada Fish Commissioner. And were introduced in a variety of places around the state, thinking that the carp would prosper and they would be like chickens to the pioneers that would be available for them to catch and harvest in abundance. And certainly any place you put carp, they generally end up in abundance whether you want them or not. But they're actually, they're classified as an unprotected species in Nevada. We obviously don't actively stock them. We certainly don't need to, even if we wanted to. But, you know, they can be fun to fish for. And some people enjoy that. A lot of people enjoy that. When I worked in southern Nevada, we actually had an event every year at Lake Mead that was a carp fishing derby. And there were people that would come over from England to
participate in that.
That's incredible.
If you like catching carp, there's lots of places you can do it, and it actually can be pretty entertaining, I think.
I caught more carp than anything growing up fishing the Humboldt River in Lander County.
Of course, you don't necessarily have to be focused on catching carp to catch carp.
Well, that's why
they just jump into the boat.
You just put anything, a rock on the end of a line and throw it in, they'll eat anything. Other pieces of carp, which I don't know if I'm allowed to say, but you catch a carp, then cut up a carp and catch more carp.
One could do that.
So now, you said it was sort of introduced as like the chicken for pioneers. Is it edible then? I mean, is this something people eat?
Well,
People do eat them.
I've never been a big fan of carp. I've had smoked carp. That helps a little bit. You can can it, I suppose.
Fertilizer. You bury them in your yard.
Great fertilizer. So, I mean, and certainly, you know, there is a market, you know, for carp. Different kinds of carp, not necessarily the common carp, but other types of carp in, you know, in Asian food stores. And I guess it's an acquired taste, but you certainly could eat them.
You could if you wanted
to.
Thank you. So for people that are interested in conservation of fish species, but maybe not necessarily interested in angling, is there anything they can do to support the system or to help out?
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, certainly one thing that helps us is knowing that we have public support for these programs.
Right.
I think that's important. There isn't a program for this non-game species conservation, similar to what we have for wildlife conservation or fish conservation through the Wildlife and Sport Fish Restoration Act. There isn't like an excise tax on binoculars or something that supports these non-game programs like we have an excise tax on firearms to support wildlife conservation or fishing tackle to support sport fish conservation. But I think that general support is there. I think there's opportunities for volunteers to help us with things for people that are interested. And, you know, just generally we do get a little bit of general fund support from the public at large for our programs. And, I think the opportunity is there. And I think one of the biggest things people can do is just be aware of this. And when you're out there, you know, use common sense and do things that help conserve these aquatic systems. Don't go out and trash the landscape. Don't trash springs. Do things that help contribute to a healthy environment.
That is great advice. And, of course, I want to remind people that are interested in angling that, of course, after March 1st, they need to buy a new license. So please get out there and do that. It's all the time we have for today. I want to thank John Schoberg again for coming on our show. Check the Nevada Department of Wildlife website at endow.org to learn all about hunting, fishing, boating, and outdoor recreation of every kind. You're listening to Nevada Wild on 630 AM Fox Sports Radio and podcasting across the state. Join us next week or find us at nevadawild.org.
Join us again next week for our next adventure, Nevada Wild. It's a production of the Nevada Department of Wildlife.